take a deep breath, and as you exhale, send beams of energy to connect yourself to the great central sun at the center of the earth. Open your heart and love and appreciation for the earth, all the plants, animals, minerals, water, fire, and air. And feel gratitude for your magnificent physical body that recreates itself daily. And now, please send a beam of energy from your heart, through your high heart, into the cosmic Christ consciousness level of your own oversoul. Feel the love and the power and the energy coming back from your soul, down through your body and into the earth. We invite the presence of Saint Germain. And as he enters the room, he walks around the circle, and in the left hand of each of us appears a crystal cup filled with clear, sparkling liquid. In our right hand, a small cake of crystal-like substance appears. We drink the liquid, which tastes like nothing we have ever physically experienced before. It tastes similar to iced juice of grapefruit, but is sparkling and effervescent. When we eat the cake, our bodies begin to feel lighter, and a sensation like lightning moves up our spine and through our bodies. After we consume the liquid, the cups disappear. Saint Germain telepathically invites us to leave our physical bodies and to follow him into the Ascended Master Retreat. As we leave our bodies and move out of this room, there is a sense of air passing by our bodies, but no sense of being cold or hot or afraid. Below us, we begin to see the Tetons, and as we continue, soon the stretch of mountains of the full Grand Teton is present. And we gently come down in front of the Grand Teton, and softly our feet touch the ground. We're at the base of the Grand Teton, near the crystal clear water of Jackson Lake. We notice the meadow, the wildflowers, the butterflies. And we approach the base of the mountain as if we're still floating, and suddenly we realize we're now clothed in rich garments of different colors of illuminated fabric. And mentally, the master explains that the substances composing the garments that we now wear have the qualities and powers which make it possible for its wearer to lift and transport physical objects. The garment itself possesses pure electronic energy and can be used to move objects, the same as the force one uses through the physical body. This is the power used by the masters to build some of the enormous edifices, such as the Great Pyramids built by the ancients, that are still standing in various energy centers of the earth. We soon reach the top of the great mountain that stands sentinel over one of the most beautiful scenic sites in the United States. Vast forests and meadows lay beneath us, and great ranges of mountains with their treasures of mineral wealth still untouched by humans. The mountains stretch as far as the eye can see. We move to a point where huge masses of stone lay jumbled as if giants had hurled them in a war upon each other. Saint Germain touches a great boulder, and instantly the enormous mass tips out, moving about 4 feet from its original position. He motions for us to follow him, and we enter the opening and approach a large bronze door. He tells us that the opening has been here since before the sinking of Atlantis, more than 12,000 years ago. He steps forward and presses certain points on the door, and the great door, weighing many tons, swings slowly open and admits us into a spacious chamber. Saint Germain steps across the room to a door opposite the stairs and places his hand against it. As the door opens, we stand before the entrance of a tube elevator. The interior looks like frosted silver. He explains the metal is harder and stronger than steel and is indestructible. A flat disc of the same metal fitting the tube quietly closes and rises within it to the level of the floor. The platform is controlled and operated entirely by Saint Germain's mind. He steps upon it, and we follow. The door closes, and we begin to descend. It is a long way down, although the elevator does not seem to move rapidly. The platform comes to a stop at another bronze door of an entirely different design. He explains that we have descended 2,000 feet into the very heart of the mountain. The space we step into is of a peculiar design and arrangement. It forms an oblong from east to west, and northeast to northwest corners have been cut at an angle. This forms an outer court or reception room. The heavy bronze door from the tube elevator opens into the court on the northeast wall. In the north side, two other large bronze doors exactly alike face us. Following Saint Germain, we enter into a great audience hall. On the northwest wall, it is still another fourth door, like the one through which we came. Opposite, on the long, unbroken stretch of the south wall, hangs an immense tapestry made of an unusual material. The weave is coarse, but the fiber or thread is as soft as a kitten's fur. The background is of a delicate cream color, and against this are two life-size figures representing god beings of great majesty and power. The one on the right is masculine, the other feminine. Both are standing as if in the act of commanding cosmic forces to obey their decrees. The masculine figure is wearing a full flowing robe of some rich material of a deep sapphire blue, banded and heavily embroidered in gold. It is evidently a robe that symbolizes great authority. Under the outer robe is a tunic of golden fabric, metallic in appearance. A sunburst of rubies, diamonds, sapphires, and emeralds cover his chest. The waist is encircled by a jeweled belt, and from it hangs a panel about 12 inches long. It too is heavily encrusted with the same kinds of jewels. The tunic reaches his knees, and the lower edge is trimmed with a band about 4 inches wide of heavily embroidered silk of the same color as the jewels. The entire effect gives us the impression that the garments were all self-luminous. His feet are clad in sandal-like boots of golden leather, reaching almost to his knees, very ornate and laced with sapphire blue cords. The band of gold, about an inch and a half wide, rests halfway down upon his forehead, binding his wavy golden hair which hangs about 6 inches below his shoulders. His complexion is fair, with a soft pink tint, and his eyes are deep violet blue. The fingers of his left hand rest lightly over his heart, and the upraised right hand holds a blazing crystal rod of power and authority. The lower end of the rod is shaped to a point, and on the top rests a sphere about 3 inches in diameter, and it gives off rays of sparkling white light which touch our hearts. The figure's appearance is youthful, but he appears to be in the act of wielding gigantic power of some mighty cosmic force. His eyes meet ours and hold our attention as if he is aware of each of us individually and at the same time aware of the wisdom of the ages. The feminine figure's robe of authority is a deep violet banded with golden embroidery, similar to that of the male. Her underdress is a soft golden shimmering material that comes almost to the floor. The thread used in weaving a tapestry to represent the garment, Saint Germain says, is actually composed of the material in the master's original clothing. The feminine being wears a jewel girdle whose panel reaches about 2 inches below her knees and is encrusted with the same kind of jewels as those of the masculine figure. The toe of her right sandal is just visible beneath the edge of her dress and is of a golden leather. Her headdress is a plain band exactly like his, and her eyes are the same violet blue, but lighter in shade. Her golden hair extends beyond her knees. On her chest, suspended from a golden chain, hangs a large seven-pointed star cut from a single diamond. In her left hand, she holds a crystal sphere about 6 inches in diameter, and in her right, uplifted like that of the other figure, is a scepter of an ornate design. About two-thirds of the lower portion of the scepter is made of gold, terminating in a sphere-shaped point. It forms a design at the top similar to the fleur-de-lis, except that the middle point is much longer and tapered to a slender apex. The curved leaf on the right of the central portion is a beautiful pink, and on the left a deep sapphire blue. The middle one is crystal white. All the points are transparent and glow with light. The gold and crystal-like portions blend with each other perfectly, for there is no line of demarcation between the two substances. Her scepter symbolizes the three activities of creative force, similar to the threefold flame in our own heart, which represents love, power, and wisdom. The crystal ball in her left hand reveals the unmanifested perfection of the future in cosmic activity. Both scepters represent the drawing and directing of the creative force of the universe. The couple are radiant and beautiful, even in the tapestry. Saint Germain stands by patiently waiting while we study the whole concept as it's so magnificently displayed. These beings somehow seem familiar to us, as if we've either seen this tapestry before, or we've actually seen these great beings in our visions, in our night work. He explains that these two great beings are the founders of the Teton Retreat. We now pass through the bronze door on the right and enter a large room, which we realize instantly is used as a great council hall for sacred purposes. The whole atmosphere is one of magnificence and beauty. Words utterly fail to convey that which we see, and our feelings expand as we become accustomed to the dazzling light and the splendor of our surroundings. This room is at least 200 feet long and 100 feet wide, with a ceiling about 50 feet high. A soft white light floods the area, which Saint Germain explains is an omnipresent force that the great ones use for light, heat, and power. About 20 feet of the side walls at the end of the room are formed in white onyx. Where this formation ends, the builders cut through a great vein of virgin gold, exposing a vein more than 2 feet in width. The main stretch of both side walls is a light blue granite, but near the end from which we enter, the natural structure changes into rose granite of a still finer quality. The surface of the wall, ceiling, and floor is lightly polished, evidently by some remarkable process. The arched ceiling is some 10 feet higher than the side walls and is inlaid with the most unique design. Notice where the ceiling meets the wall all the way around the room, the golden roses that are cut into the wall. Directly in the center of the disc of gold, at least 12 feet in diameter, the disc extends to the point of the seven-pointed star, touches the circumference. The star is composed entirely of yellow diamonds and emits a solid mass of brilliant golden light that once again touches our heart and expands our consciousness. Radiating from this central sun are two rings of color, each about 12 inches wide, and form a definite band of light around the star. And of these, the inner band is rose pink and the outer an intense violet. The background against which the star lays looks like golden frost. The star itself sends down long streams of crystal light that bathe our bodies and add to our consciousness. Around the design are seven smaller discs, each about 2 feet in diameter, representing the planets of our system and the seven rays of color within the spectrum of white light. The surface of every disc is velvet-like in its softness, and only the clearest and most intense positive shade of each color has been used. At certain times, for special purposes, great cosmic beings pour through these disks their powerful currents of force. Here, it is received by the great illumined, unselfish ones known as the Ascended Masters of Light, who again send forth to humanity and the earth. This radiation affects the seven ganglionic centers within every human body on our planet, as well as all animal and plant life. The background of the entire ceiling is the color of very clear sky on a brilliant moonlit night, yet the surface is highly refractive. In the center, at the far end of the hall, about 35 feet from the floor, in the wall is a large eye, at least 2 feet across, similar to the eye of Horus. This represents the all-seeing eye of the Creator, forever watching its creation, and from whom nothing is hidden. A tremendous power is focused through the eye at certain times for the accomplishment of specific results. We can only speculate what our sensations would be were we here to see the power of that full operation. Perhaps 40 feet from the far end of the east wall, stretching about 70 feet in length and 30 feet in height, is a panel of some precipitated material. It is placed a little more than 5 feet above the floor level and sunken into the side wall for a depth of 2 inches, making a concave surface around the entire edge. The substance composing it looks like beautiful velvet of a deep indigo blue. Yet it is not a fabric of any kind. The nearest physical material to which one could compare it would be that of a mineral. This substance is not in use in the outer world of humankind anywhere, but it can be and is sometimes precipitated by this great ascended masters of light for special purposes. Saint Germain explains that the panel has been precipitated and serves as a universal mirror for the instruction of initiates and inner members of the group of highly evolved beings. Those great ones work ceaselessly, helping the humanity of our earth to become perfected men and women and enable us to manifest in our outer life the same great perfection and dominion as did the Master Jesus. There is no outer organization of these perfected beings. Only by living and expressing perfection of thought and self-correction of human weaknesses and full adoration to the divine being within us can an individual draw themselves into association with those working at this high level of attainment. Saint Germain says, on this panel are projected scenes of earth, pictures in the ethers, the Akashic records, and activities taking place on Venus or any other point which those instructing wish to make visible to the student. Such scenes are not only pictures of the past and present, but can also portray activities far into the future. We now pass through the last door on our right and enter into a room whose dimensions are about 80 feet long, 40 feet wide, and 20 feet high, with an arched ceiling similar to that in the large hall from which we just came. Surrounded by the same golden rose cornice, Saint Germain says that the entire interior surface of this room is made of frosted gold, and the purple and green veining we see on the walls, as if embossed, is a precipitated substance. At the far end, on the side wall to our right, reaching from floor to ceiling, is a framework made of white metal that looks like frosted silver. In this framework, resting upon roller bearings, are containers made of the same metal. The lids of these containers have classifications in hieroglyphics telling the contents on four spindles within each. The hieroglyphics are embossed upon every lid. The spindles are at least 10 inches long, and around every one is wound a ribbon about 8 inches wide made of pressed gold alloy with some material that makes it tough and pliable, and yet no thicker than a piece of ordinary writing paper. The length of the ribbons of gold on the spindles varies from 7 to 50 feet, and on each are characters as if etched into the gold by something like a stylus. These characters have been so perfectly done as to appear like script. Saint Germain says that records fulfill his he will fulfill his promise to us to reveal our combined past. He indicates a particular section at the far end of the side wall. He says they describe the city, country, and civilization which once existed where the Sahara Desert is now, during the time in which we lived there. This room contains records of many countries and the rise and fall of many civilizations. He asks us to be seated, and he hands each of us a spindle and causes us to be able to read the individual information available to each of us, calling forth our hidden memory of former experiences in the civilization in the Sahara Desert. He says that all forms contain life, and within the light emanation of every form is recorded its entire past, which we may train ourselves to discover and understand if we are willing to give our attention and time to the self-discipline necessary to steal the confusion in our activity of our everyday existence. This eternal record within all things has existed from the beginning. Saint Germain says, in ages past, humanity manifested perfection in every way. This former condition of the race has been chronicled by historians as the Garden of Eden, Eden or Edan, meaning divine wisdom. As the conscious attention or the outer activity of the mind was allowed to rest upon the world of the physical sense, the divine wisdom and all-knowing activity of consciousness became clouded or covered over, and the cosmic divine plan of the individual's life became submerged. Perfection and conscious control by humankind over all forms was hidden and forgotten along with it. And we now open ourselves to remove the veils, the clouds that cover our knowing, our unknowing of that which has gone before and that which is to come in the future and that which we are to know. Humans became sense conscious instead of God conscious, and so manifested that which of our attention was directed, which we thought most upon. Humans deliberately and consciously turned their back upon the perfection and dominion with which God endowed humans in the beginning. Humans created their own experience of lack, limitation, and discord of every kind. Humans identified themselves with the parts, the individual parts, instead of the whole, and of course imperfection was the result. He continues speaking with us and says, all humankind's limitation is the result of the individual's own misuse of the God attributes of free will. Humans compel themselves to live within their own creations until, by direct volition of the outer activity of their mind, they again consciously look back to their royal beginning, which is God, the great source of all. When this occurs, humans will begin to remember that which they once were and may still become, the great cosmic blueprint of themselves. Standing again, we cross the council hall and enter the opposite door, and here we find a room similar in size to the one we just left, with two smaller rooms adjoining it on the north wall. In the larger room, covering almost the entire wall surface, is more metal framework filled with containers like those in the other room. Saint Germain explains that these rooms contain only gold and jewels that will be used for a special purpose which will bless the entire world when humankind has transcended its selfishness. He draws forth a container filled with gold coins and explains that this is Spanish gold, which was lost at sea and retrieved by the masters and brought here. At a future time, the gold will again be sent forth for use in the outer world. He indicated other containers of gold, which are stored from the lost continents of Mu and Atlantis and the ancient civilization of the Gobi and Sahara deserts, Egypt, Chaldea, Babylonia, Greece, Rome, and others. He states that all this gold were to be released into the outer activity of the world, it would compel sudden readjustment in every phase of human experience. At present, according to the masters, it would not be wise to do so. These great cosmic masters have been the guardians of the human race since its first appearance on the earth. Their infinite wisdom and power is almost beyond the comprehension of the human mind. Saint Germain says to us, no one in this world ever accumulated a great amount of wealth without the assistance and radiation of some ascended master. We next enter the second smaller room, which are also equipped with the same kind of containers, only not as large. These are filled with jewels of all kinds, diamonds, rubies, pearls, emeralds, sapphires, classified as to variety and quality. Smiling, he turns to us and says, now you understand and know that the great God Self is the only real owner and controller of all wealth. The Presence appoints keepers of His treasures on every plane of life, whether it is to be light, wisdom, substance, or physical riches. We are allowed and invited to choose one jewel to bring back with us. we now turn and re-enter the council hall, looking toward the entrance through which we first came. We now encounter another ascended master called Amun Bey. After we meet the master Amun Bey, we are invited to sit in seats before the panel on the east wall. In groups from 3 to 12, we see members of the ascended host move into the room until 70 of them are seated with us. Look around at these masters. Look at the familiarity. Feel the love that they project toward us. A great hush falls upon the assembly, and for a few moments, as they project energy toward us, the silence is breathless, expectant. A ball of white light begins to form in front of the panel, increasing rapidly the size and brilliance until it becomes an oval at least 7 feet in height, as though born from within the light itself, a most glorious being, tall, majestic, and powerful, appears. He made the sign, uniting the finite with the infinite, and in a voice that thrills every atom of our mind and body, he asks if we are ready. Are you ready?
Yes.
A blazing light flashes forth from the substance that composes the panel until it looks like a mirror of living light. In a moment, this changes into crystal clear atmosphere, and it becomes a cosmic screen upon which living pictures in all dimension can be portrayed with no limit to the space that can be observed. It is self-evident that everything which had or ever could take place in all eternity might be made visible on this screen if the directing intelligence so desired. Ask yourself, as these pictures are shown to us, was I there? And after asking, was I there, if you receive a positive response, remember, commit to remember what you knew. The first scenes portrayed are the continent of Mu and the activity and accomplishments of its people and the heights to which that civilization attained. This covered a period of 1,000 years. Events that come on the screen, there must have been a reign of terror to the inhabitants of that land. We witness a cataclysm which tears the surface of the earth until all collapses within itself. The ancient land of Mu sinks beneath the wave of what is now the Pacific Ocean, where it still rests, wrapped in its mantle of water. We are told it will rise and once more absorb the life and light of our physical sun. Again, as the next scene is described, ask yourself, was I there? Commit to remember what you knew. The next scene portrays the growth, beauty, wisdom, and power of Atlantis, which was a great continent covering a large part of what is now the Atlantic Ocean. At the time of Atlantis, there existed solid land between Central America and what is today Europe. The things accomplished in that age were tremendous, but again, the people's misuse of the mighty god energy overwhelmed them, and as things were thrown more and more out of balance, the tearing apart of the earth's surface by cataclysmic action was once again experienced. It left but a small remnant of Atlantis, merely an island in the mid-ocean cut off from close contact with the rest of the civilized world. The east and west portions of the land sank beneath the Atlantic Ocean, leaving only the island called Poseidonis. It had been the heart of the then-known civilized world, and the preparation was made to protect and preserve its most important activities as a central focus to carry forward certain unfinished work. In that period, very great attainment was reached. both spiritually and materially. Allow yourself to remember what you knew and what you know about the island called Poseidonis. The mechanical development of this cycle reached a very high state of achievement, and one of its most remarkable expressions was the perfection of their aerial navigation. The air transportation of our modern life is as yet very crude and primitive compared to what it was then on Atlantis and Poseidonis. The great masters of light and wisdom made this possible for the people of Poseidonis because they inspired, instructed, protected, and revealed knowledge of great advancement in every phase of human activity, as they are still doing today. A large portion of these people became aware of the great inner God power within the individual, but as before, the human side of their nature or outer activities again usurped the great energy. Selfishness and misuse of this transcendent wisdom and power gained the ascendancy to greater height than before. The masters of the ancient wisdom saw the people were building another destructive momentum and that a third cataclysm was threatening. They warned the inhabitants again and again as previously, but only those who served the light gave heed. And as they are warning us today to not misuse atomic power and all of the advancements that have been gifted to us by the masters. Great buildings were constructed of imperishable materials where records were placed that have been preserved through the centuries. These remain in a state of perfect preservation now on the bed of the Atlantic Ocean, hermetically sealed. They will be eventually brought to the light of day by the great ones who directed their preparation and control their protection. In them are recorded humanity's advancements and accomplishments of that period, so there has been no permanent loss to humankind of the activities of the Atlantean civilization. Besides the preserving of such records, great wealth, principally gold and jewels, was transferred at that time to the ascended retreats. This has been and will continue to be guarded over the centuries and used at a future time for the upliftment and advancements of generations yet to be born. The final cataclysm spent its momentum, and the last remaining fragment of a once world empire sank to the rest for purification through the centuries beneath the present Atlantic Ocean. The remembrance of Atlantis and her people, unlike the lost continent of Mu, has not been entirely forgotten or obliterated in the history of humankind, for it has been recorded in many ways through the centuries. Even though 12,000 years have elapsed since the sinking, fragments of information concerning it still drift to us from most unexpected channels. Myths and legends abound in reference to Atlantis, and there are two avenues which preserve it for humankind. We have the ability to tune in to the hermetically sealed containers in the Atlantic Ocean and to recapture the information that we once knew. As time goes on, indisputable proof of its existence and the height of its attainment will be revealed by oceanography, geology, and certain other scientific data. Pay attention and see if you were in the Sahara Desert and the Gobi Desert civilizations, showing the rise and fall of their principal activities on the screen before us. Decline in each of these was due to this time not to cataclysmic action, but being overrun by hordes of primitive souls taking embodiment on the earth at that time. Allow yourself to remember Egypt, her rise and fall, and the latter being due to deliberate misuse of knowledge and power by large numbers of humanity embodied in Egypt whose prominent qualities were pride of their intellectual accomplishments and rebellion against the restraint of their nature. These always mean failure individually or in the mass. Allow yourself to remember all the knowledge and wisdom and healing power that you had access to in the Egyptian civilization. Egypt rose to her greatest height by the right use of knowledge and power. These always demand humility, obedience of the intellect to the God self within, absolute and unconditional control of the human or lower nature in those who seek such gifts if they are to avoid destruction. The souls embodied in Egypt during her decline were not underdeveloped, as were those in the civilizations of the Gobi and the Sahara deserts. On the contrary, they had attained the conscious use of knowledge and power and deliberately chose to misuse it. This activity has nothing whatsoever to do with wisdom, for those who are the eternal inheritors of the gifts from the divine goddess must forever be above all temptation to misuse knowledge and power. Wisdom is the right use of all that manifests, and those who realize this self-evident, immutable truth become an open door to all good that abides in creation. Saint Germain said the reference to Egypt as a land of darkness is most unjust, for out of Egypt in an earlier cycle came very great light, and out of Egypt will again come very great light. The next scenes portrayed before us were the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. Allow yourself to begin to remember your Roman incarnation and the presence of the Master Jesus. When the darkness and the degradation of those centuries had reached their lowest point, Jesus appeared, pouring out the cosmic Christ consciousness energy into all of humanity. His transfiguration, resurrection, and ascension, such an overwhelming flood of God's perfection spread over the earth that never again can so vast a darkness encompass humanity in any age. The accomplishment of his life stands eternally recorded upon the atmosphere of this planet and acts as a magnet drawing humankind into like perfection. The coming of Jesus was an initiation to the people of our world and a cosmic command to use the power of divine love in all their future activities. This outpouring of his love to the earth at this darkest cycle became the birth of the Christ consciousness in each individual. He called forth once again the cosmic divine blueprint and revealed the decree for the coming age. That plan is the complete dominion over all things finite through the full stature of the Christ within every human being, the I Am Presence. Next, we see the reign of Richard the Lionhearted of England. Humanity has little or no knowledge of the real spiritual activity that took place during those years. The same lights inspired Richard's enthusiasm and activities in the Crusades released through his followers and the people of that time certain forces that the ascended host used at inner levels of consciousness. The world wars in Europe and following wars are not shown to us, as we were told it is too destructive for our consciousness to contemplate. We are told that nothing can possibly be gained by focusing our attention upon war. At this point on the screen, the activities of the ascended host are revealed to us, and we see them dissolve the cause and greater part of the accumulated momentum of the world's wars and conflicts. We see them accomplish it by consciously focusing and directing the enormous rays of light whose power consumes and transmutes more than we can possibly imagine. These perfected ones have been watching and waiting for the cosmic moment to arrive when they perform with humanity the service of love that has been long awaited and of which humankind has had little or no comprehension until the gift of the 49 rays were revealed to humankind. The remarkable pictures continue in front of us and reveal activities stretching forth into the future, affecting the whole earth. We watch many changes come in the surface of the land itself. One of the most important of these concerns the progress of North America. The divine plan for the future of North America is a condition of intense activity and the greatest peace, beauty, success, prosperity, spiritual illumination, and dominion. America is to carry the Christ light and be the guide for the rest of the earth, because America is to be the heart center of the Golden Age. The greater part of the land of North America will stand for a very long time. This has been known for over 200,000 years, and Saint Germain gives his individual expression and love specifically to America. The pictures before us continue and portray many scenes and activities that have entirely escaped the recording of historians and the world of science because of their great antiquity. Wonderful and beautiful as our moving pictures are today, they are mere toys when compared with the living, breathing, actual existence revealed upon this cosmic screen. Here it is possible to watch the cosmic cause go forth into many events and conditions found upon the earth, so that those of us watching will receive instruction of most extraordinary magnitude. We will receive inner instruction which will be of great help to us any time we choose to enter this retreat and sit or stand before the screen. The pictures cease, and Saint Germain introduces us to the Ascended Master Lanto, who manifests from within the blazing light with the other 70 masters. He says they rejoice that we are now ready to join in conscious service with them and the glorious work at hand. He points out that we receive this opportunity to serve because we have won over our human self and the outer world through our struggles. Everyone who sincerely seeks the light is always known to the Ascended Masters. They suggest that each day we are to accept in its fullness the mighty active presence of the great God within us, and that here can exist no such thing as failure when we remember to address our own I Am presence and allow it to work through our bodies, minds, and spirits. Lanto blesses the assembly, and the masters depart the room, leaving us with Saint Germain. He says there is one more thing he wishes us to see before we return to our bodies. He leads us into a room filled with unusual musical instruments that are used for a specific purpose. He shows us something similar to a pipe organ and beautiful harps. He tells us that the tone of these instruments are superior to anything the earth has ever known before in music. He says that these organs will come into use in the outer world as the coming golden age moves forward. We finish our inspection of the instruments and leave through the door on the northeast wall. We enter a room filled with unusual chairs. Each of us is initiated and invited to be seated in these chairs. It is explained to us that these chairs are atomic activators. Allow yourself to now feel every cell of your body being activated and rejuvenated. Take a few deep breaths and take in the vibration to the fullest extent your physical body is possible. We once again stand up, and instead of passing out of the retreat as we had come in, Saint Germain opens a small door on the left, and we enter a glistening tunnel which becomes instantly illuminated by white light. that he always releases by manipulating the electronic substance about him. We walk rapidly forward in the tunnel and come to a bronze door that opens at his touch. We are once again outside, and he once again offers each of us a crystal cup of clear, white, sparkling liquid. Allow yourself to drink the liquid of remembering. Commit that this night and in the future, when you hear this recording or remember this experience, you will begin to remember more and more of your past and be more and more conscious of all that's happening around you. After we drink the liquid, he returns us to our physical bodies, bidding us Adonai and a good night's rest. Allow yourself to be very aware of your hands, your feet, and your head, and when you feel totally present, allow yourself to open your eyes.